These interrogations that happened every 2 or 3 days would last for an hour and a half or 2 hours in this manner. The details of the interrogations were different. In some cases, they would bring dogs, then start the interrogation. In other cases, they'd put you in a place and throw cold water or hot tea on you, then start the interrogation. But of course, all the interrogations were conducted while you were kept naked and hooded, and they'd ask you questions to which you answer. I stayed for 40 days in a solitary cell, and 70% of that time I was kept naked.
That's Abu Ghraib prisoner Salah al-Jali. He now lives in Sweden.
Mm-hmm. He now lives in Sweden, yeah. And just to clarify, the jury awarded each of the plaintiffs $3 million in compensatory damages and $33 million in punitive damages because they saw right through Khaki's deflection and finally held them responsible for the egregious and reckless conduct the jury found they engaged in. So it is a small victory in the context of broader human rights efforts in the global war on terrorism that so many people have been involved in over the 20 years, but it's still significant.
Bahar Azmi, thank you so much. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
Good morning. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Imani Mohammed from Youth Organized and United to Help. They've got great activities and events coming up, and right now they're raising money to repair their broken window and a bunch of other things too. So I'm going to try to make the magic work, and we'll be right back. Imani, are you there? I think we're live on the air.
Good morning.
Yay!
We did it.
We did do it. If you're listening right now, I mean, there's so much going on in the world. We don't have to tell you anything about that. But this morning has just been crunchy and bumpy. It just has. But Imani Mohammed, Youth Organized and United to Help, and so much more. Thanks for being here. You've been a guest on this show before, but I'm probably going to ask you a lot of the same questions for the people who didn't hear us last year, plus more information about the work you're doing with youth. But let's talk about, what do you do? What is Youth Organized and United to Help?
Thank you. Yes, we are so honored always to have KBOO reach out to us, and of course you, Lisa Loving, so big shout out to all the KBOO listeners. Thank you all for tuning in. Youth has been around since 2007. We've been doing the work in North and Northeast Portland for many, many years and have broadened our scope of work to East County and pretty much all over the state of Oregon. We are, in short, a organization that really raises awareness to the school-to-prison pipeline, which is an epidemic that is happening not only in the state of Oregon but all over the United States, where there's a push-out process with students, particularly Black, Brown, and Indigenous youth. And the push-out is pushing them from school to prison. And there's a whole conversation around that. But we are an organization that wants to address that, wants to change the trajectory of young people's lives. And in doing that, we obviously will connect with families and community in doing that work. So not only do we do after-school programming and during school support with remote learning students and students that are online, we also have music classes, enrichment classes. We have a basketball team that we started. We do family and literacy and culture nights at our center, and really just provide a space, a safe space for community and youth and families to feel like they can come and get the love that they need, but also from a culturally specific way. So we do a lot out on 162nd and Stark. And I think once you got a building, which we got 2 years ago, a lot of our work increased because now we have a place that everybody can come to.
I love that about that too, your community center. I want to stay on a couple of these issues for a minute and then move on to the specific programs you're doing. You're one of those people that's doing so many of the things that other people randomly say, you know, somebody somewhere should be doing, having after school help for kids in East County. You're doing so much of that. But honestly, what's going on with the kids? I just have to stop everything right now. You're one of the people that I know who is directly connected with kids, kids who have struggles, kids who have victories. What's going on in their minds?
Yeah, you know, there's been it's a blessing and a curse when you talk about technology and you talk about smartphones and internet and all of the things that our young people are naturally gravitating to, video games, all of that. I think there's great things when it comes to that, because technology allows us to do things faster and more efficient and effective. And then on the flip side of it, it has decreased this ability to know how to socialize and know how to just have simple conversations with their peers and their adults that are in their environment. And so I think what we're seeing now is we're trying to figure out, how do we scale back this instant gratification that young people are looking for? How do we scale back this desire to want to push and click and voila, the world changes, and get them to understand that you cannot replace hard work, right? You cannot replace putting in the effort of study time. You know, I have a child myself, and so a lot of my inspiration comes from being a mother. And, you know, my son, put him on the spot, you know, his generation don't take notes the way that we took notes in school. Like, they think they can do math in their mind, right? At some point, algebra, you got to have some paper. At some point, you got to get some paper for multiplication. I just use that as a small example to say that a lot of our young people have skipped steps, right? And for whatever the reason, you know, I put it all on us as adults. And so what we're seeing when we're working with young people is this kind of inability right now to have endurance and want to go and push hard and go through the hard struggles, go through the times that it doesn't feel good, you know, and that's in sports, that's in the classroom, that's in, you know, society. Let's say you apply for a job and you don't get the job. You know, the tolerance right now that I'm seeing is very short, and so there's a lack of loyalty. There's a lack of commitment. I can go on and on about different pieces, you know, in the sports world, for example, and then I'll pause, you know, you have young people that they play for a team and the coach doesn't play them for a game. And so instead of asking the coach, hey coach, why didn't you put me in? They just want to jump to the next team. Right. And over time, that lesson doesn't teach young people how to endure, how to navigate, how to have hard conversations. So I think right now we have to teach our young people the skills that I think have been lost. You know, I'm a little over 40, and I feel like we're kind of the elders now in a weird way, but in a way of kind of teaching some of those old school methods, right? Those old school techniques that we were raised on. So that's kind of what I see right now. And lastly, I'll say there's a lack of caring adults that want to step up and do the work that I just outlined. Growing up, there were a lot more mentors in the community. There were a lot more organizations that actually wrapped around our families and created kind of this village mentality. I feel like Portland has lost some of those individuals, or they moved away, or unfortunately, some have lost their lives. So we're missing kind of that nurturing group of adults. And I know they still exist, but I think there's a shortage in real mentorship and real coaches that are doing the work in the real way.
No, Imani, no, that can't be, because on my Facebook, I see all these dudes who are talking about what the kids need to do now and what the moms need to do and what the families need. No, I mean, there must be plenty of men to help you.
rhetoric is rhetoric, right? I think that people talk a good game, you know. And again, I have met folks in, you know, my circle that are doing the work. But when I compare the numbers in the 80s and 90s to now, I definitely feel like there's a decrease in people that are actually doing the work. Keyword, doing the work. Right. We all talk about the problem. But how many people wake up, you know, every day? Just for an example, last night, I got home from practice, or on my way home from practice, I had to go lock up the building. A houseless man was sitting out front, who I know. I ended up opening my doors, getting him some food, some shoes. His socks were wet. We gave him some socks. Like, that stuff is, those moments are few and far between right now. Like, a lot of people don't show up in that way. And I'm not saying that to give myself kudos. I'm just saying that's an example of what I feel like we need to do more often on a daily basis to support our community, more importantly, support our young people. They need to see examples of that. And we don't have that on a day-to-day basis right now.
You know, Imani, we're going to talk about Youth Organized and United to Help in a minute. I just keep coming back to the themes that you're weaving out here today, because this election, this presidential election that we had this week, was a whopper, right? I'm not going to say, absolutely. I'm not even going to say that I think it was unique, because I think that around the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, in what's called the Reconstruction era in our history, even worse things happen straight up. Even worse things happen. That is true. Mm-hmm. But it makes me wonder how we as a society, like, how do we get past this? Do we get past this? And more importantly, how do we support the kids? How do we support the people who are right now ground zero around us? And we're all looking around and saying, is this the night before Nazi o'clock in the United States, right? Which we talked about for so many years. But this is what I want to ask you, walking all the way back. This show is keeping it real because I want to educate people. I want people to know that there's other people organizing people in their own neighborhoods, in their own cities. Because we can all be doing that. But for people right now who want to engage, the people who don't get engaged, but you know they're paying attention, right? It's just like the voters. I think a lot of voters came out this week that people did not expect to come out, right? And you can complain about that guy, DJT, but that guy's crazy like a fox. That guy did a lot. The person who won the presidential election did a lot to organize people. So I just want to ask you, if we look around our communities and we see that bad things are happening, we're concerned that more bad things are going to happen. How do we reach the people who aren't really paying attention? That's a big, heavy question, but I just have to ask you.
Yeah, wow. I think... So I think my first thought goes to those of us that are doing the work, continue to do the work and find solidarity and community amongst organizations that are already kind of in your field or want to get in your field. So, for example, I'm in a coalition of other nonprofits, and we actually just had a meeting yesterday talking about, you know, what can we do? And I think the resounding theme was to continue to do what we do times 10, right? Now, what does that mean? That means not giving up. That means continuing to paint the picture of hope and vision for our families and our community. That means we don't get to get tired, right? Sure, self-care is wonderful, rest day is good, but if you're going to step into this world of service and being a leader, you've got to continue to be the example for our community, because so many people are losing hope right now. And if anybody is reads any book, as in the Bible, we know that where there's no vision, the people perish. And that is a true statement. So I think it's on us that are light bearers, that are people that are in the work of service, to continue to raise the flag and continue to have that light burn. With that being said, for those that people that sit on the sidelines, I think these are these moments where you have to make a choice. And quite honestly, I don't feel like we're going to be able to sit back any longer and not pick a side. And a side, not in red and blue, Democrat, Republican, not, that's not the side I'm talking about. I'm talking about the side of helping your fellow brother and sister or not, right? So when do you decide to step up and say, you know what, I'm going to care when somebody on 162nd loses their life, right? I'm going to actually maybe show up at a visual to just show solidarity because somebody lost their life, right? Or when do I say, you know what, I've got clothes in my closet that are collecting dust, and I know that there's a community center down the street that gives out clothes every week. I'm not doing anything with my clothes. Let me drop them off there. Just those small gestures doesn't mean that you have to be this warrior, right, and just be this leader for the whole community. That's just a very simple task that takes you one step closer to helping somebody next to you, right? So I think this idea that we have to all be, you know, community leaders and nonprofit executive directors, no. We all can just start with, when I look outside my window, what needs to be fixed, right? Like, is there trash on my street? Let me go pick it up. Does my elderly neighbor who has their grass, you know, a foot high, need it cut? Let me go ask her if I can help her, right? It's those small gestures that I think we've gotten away from, especially in this society, that help move and change the culture of community, society, and more importantly, change how young people think about serving and growing up in this world. That's what I would say to the people that are sitting on the sideline. It doesn't take a lot. It takes a little bit of a gesture just to think about the person next to you.
And not expect somebody else to do it.
Absolutely. And I'll even say this. If you saw it, if you saw the problem, you might be the person that's there to fix it. There may be a reason that your eyes caught the problem.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is Imani Muhammad from Youth Organized and United to Help. They've got great activities and events coming up. We're going to start talking about them in a minute. But right now, they need to fix a broken window. And that's where we are. Imani, now I want to go and start talking about the programs. Or do you want to talk about the window now? Like, we can plant the seed for talking about this. You know, when you're running a center like you do, there's always going to be something that's kind of an emergency expenditure. And talk about that and talk about how people can support you when that happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, the unique thing about the damage to our window, you know, we moved into the space 2022. For those that may not know, we took over the Rosewood Initiative location off of 162nd and Stark. They have since, you know, moved down a little further on, or down Stark, I should say. But we took over their location, and for three years, we have not had any damage to our building. There have been other tenants in that complex that have had their windows broken out, graffiti, I mean, a lot of stuff. But our building has been protected up until the day after the election. Now, I don't know what to think, to be honest. I don't want to put any thoughts out there, well, it's because of this or because of that. What I will say is just the fact. We haven't been touched, and then we got hit, you know, the day after the election. You know, there's a couple of thoughts that go in my mind. I think the day of, I was definitely kind of devastated and shocked and a little hurt. It's a building. I'm aware of that, but I think it's the impact of what that damage can do. We didn't have programming that day because we had to spend time just getting the glass up and just kind of settling in that this happened. And fast forward, you know, we are working with our property management company, but they take their time. And there's a board in front of our window. We've thought about, you know, having the kids paint it, create a mural on it, different ideas. But at the end of the day, I just want a piece of glass back in the window. I don't like looking at the wood. And so, yes, people can donate directly to our website. It will definitely help cover the cost, not only of the window, but, you know, we run during and after school programming. And what I mean by that is that we have some students who are homeschooled and they're also doing school online. So they're able to come to the center at 12 p.m. to get academic support, tutoring, some guidance around, study habits, and then we have enrichment classes. So we're open from 12 to 6, Monday through Thursday. And so not only the window, right, as you said, in terms of emergency expenditures, but, you know, we want to provide food, you know, to our children that come to the center. We want to make sure that our staff and our mentors and everyone that comes in to support our program, you know, are compensated in a good way. So, you know, any donation that comes to youth right now is direct service money that's helping our programs and helping our young people and the people that work with our kids. I think that's something that we forget, that when we think about program money and supplies and all of that, the individuals that work with our children are also as valuable, right? And so we want to make sure that we're an organization that has comparable, rates, that we're paying our staff that are doing amazing work with them. So that's kind of the story with the window. Like I said, I was sad the first day, and then I kind of just picked up my, pulled up my pants, tied up my shoes, and said, okay, well, what's next, And then making sure that the community around us, and as I mentioned, the young houseless man who I helped, last night, he was concerned too, and he's like, I can't believe they broke your window. And I'm like, all right, we'll make sure you take care of our center. So, I think there's a community around us that was also shocked. But I think everyone's willing to step up more to help, keep our space sacred. It's not the ideal space for a youth center. I'll be honest. 162nd and Stark, next to a bar, next to a smoke shop. You just don't pick that spot and say, hey, let's have a youth center here. In your logical mind, but in a spiritual mind, in a way of changing the community, that is the best location for us. And so we make sure that we keep our space protected, and that people know this is where young people are learning to become their greatest.
We're talking with Imani Muhammad from Youth Organized and United to Help. And now I want to get into some of these activities that you do there. One of the things I love the most about you, Imani Muhammad, is that ever since I first known you, maybe I've known you for like 15 or 20 years now, you're a person who
has...
It
might be 20.
Yeah.
It might be 20.
Right? You're a person who has big ideas and then takes a breath and puts one foot in front of the other to bring those ideas to fruition, right? And mm-hmm. It really started, too, your whole approach to community work, community organizing started with one kid. One kid, yep. And actually you were working with a whole bunch of kids, but Devontae Lightfoot, back in the day, mm-hmm. Innocent kid living his life, and he was murdered there mm-hmm. on Killingsworth Street. And you didn't just, I mean, how many people have been killed like that, but you didn't stop.
Right.
And the thing that I loved about what you did, if you're listening right now, I'm just going to tell you, Imani Muhammad's creation myth as I know it, because I think I was there maybe, or walking alongside her, maybe not in the same room mm-hmm. every moment. But see, first, Imani, you started out by getting all the young men together. Right. Mm-hmm. So here mm-hmm. was this one kid who was affected. You literally said, no, let's get all these kids together and give them something positive to do that they can build on and be proud of. And you created the Youth Summit, mm-hmm. the first Youth mm-hmm. Summit. And the photographs of that, right, are amazing. Traditionally, Imani Muhammad will work with the African-American communities, but you don't restrict that. You bring in other kids, too, even though you're clear about who this is geared for. And we're talking about some of the kids that participated with that now are kids who are recording artists. They're adults who are
Absolutely.
Recording artists.
Yes.
So just love I'm going to describe it as an organic vision. I'm not going to the hippie food store right now, but it's a system that grows one step at a time in a way that's logical. Instead of thinking, I've got a Black community focused nonprofit. I'm going to go with these people over here and they're going to get me $1 million grant to do blah, 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 blah. That doesn't make any sense, right? Because those are some of the pitfalls that you, I think, have mm-hmm. avoided. But now I want to just drive this vehicle right back to what work do you do there? You've got the community closet on Wednesdays. Talk about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. First of all, just you outlining, and you have been with me every step of the way. So it's always when I hear people retell, you know, kind of the work of 15 years, I just kind of like, I don't know, I go into shock mode because it is awe-inspiring, even myself. Like, I'm like, oh, wow, we did this, you know? So just thank you for taking that moment to just outline that. I want to say that, like, I know that I have big ideas, and none of these ideas can come into fruition, one, without the creator, of course, but also my village. You know, I have people around me that have been just like, you know, all right, if Imani says it, I'm going to roll with it. I don't see it, but she does. So you know, like, I've got people that come with me on that level. Then I have people that are kind of like, okay, why would you do it this way? Let's do it this way. And so over the years, I just have to just, you know, say to all the people, and I'm not going to name names because I'm going to forget somebody, but just all the people that have believed in our work, I just thank them 100% from the bottom of my heart, because there's times where I come up with an idea and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm thinking, but I feel called to do this, and so I'm going to do it. So with that, that's a great segue of how we even got this building. You know, we were not, anyone that knows us, we were an event-based organization. Yeah. We held events every February and every August, and that was it. We didn't do day-to-day programming. I was still working my 9-to-5 at Boys and Girls Club, and so, you know, that was our nonprofit, was that it was event-based. And when we got our location, and I went to my board and I said, hey, I want to get this building, and they're like, we can get a building. It doesn't have to be that one. And I said, no, it has to be that one. And they said, okay, Imani, if that's what you want, let's go get it. So here we are now. And I will say that it's taken 2 years to really figure out what is the programming that we can lock in and say this is what we do. You know, we have literacy. We have raising awareness to reading scores and making sure our children can get to grade level and beyond with literacy. We have book drives. We've sprinkled around different ways to raise this awareness to change young people's lives. But when you get a building, people want to tell you what you should be doing as well. So it took us a while to figure out what works for us within our mission. So I think this is the year that I feel very grounded in our work. So starting with the community closet, that started with literally my team and myself cleaning out my closet and bringing it to the center and saying, hey, let's just open up the doors one day and see if, you know, people need things. And here we are 3 years later, every Wednesday from 10 to 2, the community come. We see about 20 to 30 families that come through every single day, no matter what race, color, creed, doesn't matter. They come through. We don't ask for ID. We ask for their name, what county they live in, and their household size, and how many items did you take? And that's it. And they take whatever they need. We don't question it. We're not micromanaging it. We're not saying you only can get one pair of socks. If you need 10 pairs of socks, take all 10. And then when we are out of things, I make a request to the community through Facebook, through my friends, hey, we need more men's clothes. And sure enough, people show up. So that program literally kind of runs itself. It is volunteer-based, and it's based on people donating clothes. But it's also a program that could use funding, because in the winter months, we like to provide soup or fruit or some type of food for those that come in through the doors to take whatever they need. So that happens every week. If you're interested in helping out or even want to donate, every Wednesday you can donate from 10 to 2 or just email us on our website, youthpdx.org. We also, for 2 years, I had this idea of connecting to remote learning. We know that COVID kind of helped families transition how we think about education. One, we were forced to. But then two, a lot of families realized that their students were more successful, not in the classroom, and more successful being online and having a small community. So there's a lot of families that I've talked to that have transitioned into either homeschooling or remote learning. So we wanted to open up our doors to provide enrichment, socializing, and just kind of an environment where, like a learning hub, where our students can kind of come and just digress, but also be around other students that are like them. So to create that socializing hub for them. And that's what our EAS program is. It stands for Enrich, Achieve, and Succeed. And that's from Monday through Thursday from 12 to 6.
And that's more than just tutoring. That's tutoring, but it's other things too. Let's linger on that one too.
Oh, yeah. So the tutoring, definitely the tutoring is specific to reading. We would love to get other subjects, experts to come in and help our children with math and other subjects. But right now it's reading, language arts, and English, or language arts, I should say, and social studies. And so that's academic support. That's, okay, what's your missing assignments? How do we help you with those? So there's that piece. But then in addition to that, we have music classes. We have, when I say music classes, not like strings instruments, although that's nice too. But we're doing, we've got an artist that works with us, Julian Outlaw, who works with the city of Portland and us. And he is teaching beat making. He's teaching, how to be an artist. So they do talent shows every week for us to learn how to kind of put on a production. They're learning graphic design. They're learning how to put words to paper. So they're all becoming rappers. But for the technique of how to write, how to take your thoughts and bring it to paper. So when I say music, it's kind of the 2024 version of music. And they're learning that, and then they also have health and fitness. And so we have an instructor that comes in, teaches them about smoothies, juicing, exercise, yoga, stretching, just the value of being healthy. That all happens throughout the day from 12 to 6. We're going to have ballet. We have a ballet instructor getting ready to start probably at the start of the new year. And then we're reaching out for some more tutors to come in around math and science. So it's kind of it's a learning hub. It's a hybrid of, what do we know our kids are missing? And then how do we infuse that and supplement that at our center?
How old are the kids? The kids that participate in that?
Fourth grade and up. So okay. I think our oldest is an eighth grader, and then our youngest is a fourth grader. I just have to say this too. In addition to that, we have a partnership with Portland Parks and Community Music Center. So we offer music lessons in our center too. So we have private piano lessons. We have private keyboard lessons. And we're going to be starting private drum classes. And when I say private, that just means smaller numbers, up to 6 students. So we have those classes happening at the center as well. So the center is busy. Monday through Thursday. We are definitely looking for more students. So if you know of anyone that wants to sign up, let us know. We don't want it to be more than 20 kids in the space. We want it to be small, intimate, so we can do intentional work. Yeah. And in addition to that, we still do our community events. We've got our back to school event that we do in the summer where we give out school supplies. We have our family movie and culture nights where we're providing dinner and a movie for families just to get out the house and hang out with each other. And then we do our literacy nights, and then we're moving into December for celebrating our third annual Kwanzaa Ujamaa Marketplace.
Let's talk about that for a second. I'm a white person. I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant person. Probably everybody knew that. And so I grew up experiencing the winter holidays, I'm going to say Christmas, right? And we all went shopping and we spent time with our family and we ate really good food and I loved it. It's one of my favorite holidays. But Kwanzaa is a different thing. Kwanzaa, talk about what is Kwanzaa and how do you do it there at the center?
Absolutely, yeah. So let me first say I am not a Kwanzaa expert. So there are different people in our community that I would definitely refer out to. I personally did not start celebrating Kwanzaa probably until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Now, here's the interesting fact. I learned about Kwanzaa in high school at St. Mary's Academy through my, I think she was my social studies teacher. She was white. So my white teacher, who was from Alabama, is the one that taught me about Kwanzaa. And we actually celebrated it in high school 1 year. Very interesting.
Now I want to meet her. Now I want to know everything about her. But keep going.
Yeah,
keep going.
I'll find her name. Totally great experience, though. And I appreciate it because there was only maybe 2 black students in the classroom. And that was her way of like, hey, let's celebrate everybody's culture. So I appreciated that. And from there, I've never forgotten that. Fast forward, You know, I've participated here in the city, you know, Miss Mama Joyce Harris, you know, Renee Mitchell, Shafia Monroe, like a lot of folks have kept that spirit of Kwanzaa alive.
They have regular Kwanzaa events this time of year. Yeah, it's incredible. Keep going.
Yeah, so the purpose of Kwanzaa was not so much to be an alternative to Christmas, and I want people to understand that. It's not an alternative to anything. So as you choose to celebrate your holidays, you know, do what you do. It starts the 26th of December, and it goes to January 1, and it's 7 principles for 7 days, and it's really about celebrating African and African American and Black culture in a way of community and bringing the principles that have been lost at times over the years, bringing those principles back into our community. So, for example, for us, the principle that really sticks to me is cooperative economics, which is Ujamaa, and really that's about recycling our dollar and making sure our dollar stays within our community. And so one of the biggest kind of symbols of that is to host Black and brown businesses in our center, where we're purposely, like, you're coming to this event knowing you're spending money. Like, you're purposely coming to shop with businesses to share our resources and to show the power of the dollar, right? To show the power of currency by spending with people that look like you, right? So for anyone, you know, the principles are rooted in Black culture, absolutely. I think that when you have a public event, you know, I think anyone that wants to understand culture or even believe in supporting businesses, you know, it is open for everyone. So I think as we promote these events, in particular about cooperative economics, anyone can participate and show up. Now, participate not as a vendor, but can participate and help economics flow through our community. But I will say that it is particularly for, you know, the Black culture. It is about us identifying our culture, being rooted in principles that help us, you know, thrive as a community. And I think, too, when you look at the principles, I think they're very universal and anybody can apply them to their lives. You know, and the last principle, which, you know, is Imani.
Right.
And these are all Swahili languages and words, but having faith, you know, through it all. And I think that's the other principle that sticks with me and why it's important that I share with my son and that we do our own kind of way of Kwanzaa and our version of Kwanzaa. And there's, you know, there's celebrations, there's candles, there's different ways to do it. But I will say that for me, it's the principles and being aware of the value of those principles.
Imani, years ago, you schooled me in the principles of hip hop. And it's interesting because you're bringing values. You're bringing personal and social values to the table. And I'm cracking up because I learned about Kwanzaa in college when we were studying Molana Karenga. Right.
Yeah.
But we didn't really learn the words. We didn't really learn what it meant. And I loved my professor. He was a great guy, but there was a lost opportunity there. So umoja, unity, kujijagulia is self-determination. Ujima, yeah, collective work and responsibility. Ujama, cooperative economics. Nia, a lot of wonderful women named Nia, purpose. Kumba, which is creativity, and Imani, which is faith. And Imani, like, you're one of these fixed points in time as a human being that I've met who just literally moves forward doing the right thing. You just do. Like, everything happens around you. I've seen values of our own communities change and shift around you. But you don't.
Wow.
You're watching the North Star. You know what the lodestar is. You know what you're doing. And this blows my mind. Can you talk? Okay, I don't want to blindside you, but can you also talk about the principles of hip hop right now? I don't mean to blindside
you. Yes. Absolutely. So I think one of the things that is important, because I think, so let me just say this, I think people can get turned off by things they don't know, right?
Yeah.
So when you just read off, you know, all of the principles of Kwanzaa, I think oftentimes people, they're just like, oh, well, that's not my culture, or I can't relate to that. So they just don't even engage. And I think if we take it one step further and just kind of go into, you know, what would it look like to learn a principle? What would it look like to even, you know, find the definition of that word? And like you said, self-determination. Who doesn't need self-determination? Like, so I just want to highlight, like, as we move into this next phase of life, right, in the next 4 years or whatever everyone is thinking about, let's maybe take this approach of, if I don't know it, what would it look like to learn it, right? And I think that philosophy would help us get away from fear, right, get us away from not knowing what other people are going to do, so then maybe I have to, like, retreat. No, let's engage. Let's try to figure out what we don't know. So with that being said, the principles of hip-hop, and the reason why I use hip-hop in a lot of our work, because hip-hop to me is not current-day hip-hop. So let me be clear on that. When I'm referring to hip-hop, I'm referring to Public Enemy, X-Clan, African Bambaataa, like, you know, Kool Herc, like music that was started from the conditions of the streets, mainly in New York, East Coast at the time, that gave a medium and a way for young people to express the struggles of the world, right? So that hip-hop that you hear back in the day is about, yeah, this is my community and this is my hood and this is what I see every day, but here's how to change it, right? So it was always solution-based. And so the five elements of hip-hop, you know, you have the MC, you have the DJ, you have breakdancing, you have graffiti, and then the fifth element is knowledge. And I think the knowledge piece is kind of what wraps everything under one umbrella. And so for me, you know, the MC is your, you know, your orator, right? Your griot, your person that speaks, right? Your DJ is the person that, you know, is controlling the airways with the vibrations of music, but also is mindful of what they play, right? Mindful of their words, mindful of the music that they play and their vibrations. Breakdancing, that's just physical health. That's how we get down. That's how we move. That's how we keep our body young. Graffiti, visual artists, right? So graffiti goes all the way back to the hieroglyphics. That is a form of graffiti, if we want to call it that. So writing on the wall, visual artists, how do you express yourself in a visual way? And then the knowledge piece is having the mindset and the mentality and the knowledge, right, of knowledge of self to be able to kind of do this work and move it forward. So, again, there's a lot of ways and a lot of things you can extract from just a simple five elements of hip-hop, right? You can apply this to your life in so many different ways. And it doesn't mean that you have to listen to hip-hop. It can just mean that you value the principles and you're applying them in your life.
And I have to say it again, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is Imani Muhammad from Youth Organized and United to Help. They've got tons of great activities and events, and we're just literally talking right now about ways that people who are listening can plug in your resources to support a meaningful nonprofit organization that's right here serving a lot of people that I hear a lot of people complaining about. So when you have a system that nurtures families, I'm just going to say it's not a bad idea to invest in that. And really quickly, I also have to come back to this issue of the elements of hip hop, because so many people, the principles, it's the five principles of hip hop. We're all freaked out because we're worried that it's Nazi o'clock. And it certainly feels like it is, even though it never has not been. In this country. Like, I just have to point to that too. But when I look at the five elements of hip hop, I look at the Kwanzaa values. This is everything that everybody is always telling us is important all the time. People left, right, and center is always telling us is important. Mm-hmm. So MCing, DJing, breakdance, graffiti, knowledge, you know, that's MCing. It's oral performance. It's oral. It's like public speaking, right? DJing is listening. It's listening and it's a form and also music, right? Breakdancing, it's physical. It's expressing thoughts and physicality. And we saw what happened at the Olympics this year. Blow my mind. They're saying that the Australian woman, the Australian woman who won the breakdancing competition has retired now. Okay. So we know the world cares. Graffiti. You know, graffiti, the visual, it's visual art. But when you said it's the writing on the wall, that just made my head go bam. And then knowledge. Mm-hmm. We all know the knowledge piece. Imani, we still have a few minutes to talk about what's really important here, what's important in our communities, what's important in East County, okay? I know that you said that the location of your community center is not fantastic, but I love going to that neighborhood. It's a vibrant neighborhood. There's a lot of people there, and there's a hella amazing grocery store right by the youth center there. But, I mean, what happens to our kids and our communities if we don't do what you're doing?
Oh, wow. You know, I mean, I think, honestly, you know, we as a community and as a society have to, I think, get back to this philosophy of, like, every decision I make, when I think about my decisions, what impact does it have on our young people? That's kind of the philosophy of our center. We call it the Center Powered by Youth because center as a physical location, but also center in a metaphysical way or a spiritual way, right? Centering ourselves helps us do work better, right? Centering ourselves, learning how to be still, learning how to check in with ourselves allows us to impact in a more effective way. So having the center, every decision that we make, and of course we make mistakes, of course, but our philosophy is like, when we make this decision, when we do an event, when we open up our doors, whatever it is, what is the impact on young people? And I kind of compare that to the campaign that came out years ago, you know, WWJD, what would Jesus do, right? Well, you can use that same philosophy and say, you know, what would our young people do, right? When I make this decision, what are our young people going to do? And so every event that we do, for example, as small as every event we do is family oriented, you know, so that means if we're putting on a hip hop show, if we're putting on a talent show, all the artists have to have clean versions of their music because we're going to have babies in the space. You know what I mean? Like it goes as small as that. Like if every event we do is for families, then everything that we put out has to be applicable to the young ears in the room. So no, you can't cuss. You know, no, you can't bring vulgar language in. Just that small gesture alone has created this standard that people kind of know that when you do an event for youth or if you come into the youth space, there's a standard of operation, right? I don't have to always say that anymore. It's kind of part of the culture that we've built. That's just an example of your question about, like, if we're not doing the work, then what happens to our kids? I think that's what we all have to step up and do. There's a lot of nonprofits in Portland. I think in the state of Oregon, I think we're the largest, have the most nonprofits per capita. And so you would think, you know, we don't have a lot of the societal problems. We would assume we should with all the nonprofits that are out here. Yet and still, we have issues. And so what I would say is that all of us that are doing certain work, you know, I'm part of the Black Student Success Network, which is made up of about 20 nonprofits, and we're all figuring out ways, how do we collaborate? How do we do the work together? You know, you have a mentoring program. Well, I do too. How do we leverage each other? How do we work together? And part of that work, and maybe sometimes even delay of that work, is the funding, right? If we're all going after the same grant, and this is part of the system.
Yes.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yes, it is.
But philanthropy is a system that needs some revision. But at the same time, you know, when you have the same nonprofits going after the same pot of money, it makes it harder for us to think about collaboration. It makes it harder for us to think about how do we work together, because we got to pay our staff. We got to pay the overhead. So finances, until we get out of this kind of chasing the dollar mentality, finances are always going to be the concern on nonprofits and small businesses. And so what I would ask is that anybody that has listened to the show or has even, you know, got inspired by a word or two or just wants to get involved, I would say finances first, but also finances, the currency can turn into volunteering your time. Time equals money as well. And so I think those are the top two ways that, you know, nonprofits like ours and others can find benefit in people that want to come and just help out. I know everybody doesn't have an extra $1 million in their bank account that they can just hand over to me. I get it. I'm looking for it too.
No, I do. I mean? I do. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll be at your house. But at the same time, right, your value, your commitment, your reshare of a post, your, you know, printing off a flyer and handing it out to somebody can be that $1 million that we're looking for, you know? So I would just say those small gestures help. And those all those things that we think about doing but we don't really do all the time, you have no idea the impact that you can have on a small nonprofit like ours just trying to change, one person's life each day. So I would just say those pieces really help. You know, you get our newsletter, share it out. You know, you don't have the money, great. Can you share the post out to 10 people? And that's the greatest help that we need is just outreach and let people know about our work. There's people that still live right across the street from us that don't know what we do, you know. That takes a marketing team. That takes, you know, me printing up postcards to do some flyering. That equals money, you know. There's just all the pieces. But we have made it this far through community support, faith, and funders that have believed in our work, you know, and has believed in our vision. So we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going. We're not going to be discouraged by anything that's happening in other places that don't impact us. We're going to stay focused and keep doing the work.
Okay. Super awkward question. Super awkward question.
I'm ready.
Honestly, Youth Organized and United to Help is, I think it's fair to say that it's a racially specific organization. How do non-Black supporters engage with you guys? See how awkward that was? But I have to ask it because I know there's a lot of people listening that would love to support.
It was very, very awkward, Lisa. We classify as a Black-led organization, right? We primarily target, in terms of our outreach and our work that we do, we target Black, Brown, and Indigenous youth and families. Target versus who we serve, two different numbers. So, our community closet, we serve, like I said, all races. So if you want to help, we want you to help. Period. I'm intentional about who we have teaching some of our classes because representation matters. And so it's important that we find people that look like the demographics that we serve. However, there are folks that are experts in their areas. And so, and they're not Black or Brown or whatever. And so we still want to work and will work and do work with anyone that wants to support our program. We're specifically a Black-led organization, women-led, but at the same time, we serve all. We serve anyone that needs our support and our help. Just knowing that we're using a culturally specific lens in the work that we do.
Okay. All of that was to get to this question, okay?
Okay.
For people who are really interested in helping and they love to work with kids, what is the process? What does that look like? And how do they proceed?
Okay, yeah, great question. For us right now, we don't have a strong volunteer program. But right now, as people come to us, they say they want to volunteer, teach a class, or just get involved. You know, we run them through a background check. And then we're like, come on Wednesday at 10 o'clock to help with the community closet. I mean, it's a very simple process. just send us an email. It's either going to go to me or our program manager, and then we'll take it from there. But it's low barrier. Again, just the background check, making sure that everybody that should be around children can be. And then we'll sign you up for a volunteer shift.
All right. We're starting to wrap up this show. So we have a list of asks, actually, from Imani. I'm just saying that. We do. We want to help fix that broken window. But also, just talk again, touch on the Kwanzaa marketplace where you're looking for local businesses to hold down a table. Talk about that a little bit. You need more people for your marketplace.
So we have our space can hold about 20 vendors. We have 17 spots left. So if you are a Black and Brown business owner, from anything, from jewelry to shea butters to body oils to facial scrubs to clothes making, whatever you have as a vendor, as a business, we want to provide a space for you. There's the fees are on our website. If you have your own table and chair, it's a lower fee. But all of that, again, is promoted to circulate economics in our community. We don't want food vendors. So, unfortunately, this type of event will not have food vendors. But any other type of vendors, we want you. And we're going to have a DJ. And we're also this year adding a panel discussion. For those that may not know, I have a YouTube channel called Art of Living. So we're actually going to be going live and doing an Art of Living business panel, talking to entrepreneurs and business owners in our city about the successes, the challenges, and the work that they do, and give them a platform to kind of talk about their work. And so super excited that we have Third Eye Books that's going to be a panelist.
Charles Hanna, we love
him. Yes, yes, doing great work. And then Cameron, who runs Dream Team Junk Removal. He's the owner of that, so he'll be on our panel, and we're looking to get one or two more panelists. So it's going to be a great event. It's from 12 to 6, but again, it's centered around supporting black and brown businesses in our community.
Kwanzaa, and just a last question about that. For people who want to go, anyone can go. Anyone can go to your
Absolutely.
Kwanzaa celebration.
Yes.
And for people who maybe have a small business, I know someone who's a house cleaner, right? For someone who has a small business who can afford to invest in a table, all that is investment in your organization. What should they expect?
Yes.
Like, what does the scene look like? So maybe the weird thing about black people in the city of Portland is a lot more people have moved here than I would have even guessed possible. And so there's a lot of people of African descent who don't know all the local scenes, right? So what can people expect if somebody's got their small business? What will they see? What will they do?
They're going to vibe out. It's going to be a whole beautiful event. So we have DJ George, who is probably one of the best DJs, I would say, in our city, who knows how to control the room and control the vibe. So you're going to walk in, you're going to see people that look like you, you're going to see other business that...
Uh-oh, you're breaking up.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I can, and thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So just a good environment. You know, music playing. It's going to be warm. 20 vendors in there. Just a great, great experience.
Kids.
Not too much heavy on talking, other than our business panel. That will be an hour and a half. We're not going to, you know, do a lecture. It's just going to be a vibe and good energy, good people, good folks.
Hey, and we have to wrap this up, and I just have to say, Imani Muhammad, it's always a joy. Thank you so much for being on the air with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Hey, a workshop in radio. We can do that. Let's commit. Let's pinky swear we're going to do that in 2025. Some kind of radio connection with Youth Organized and United to Help. Connect with them online at youthpdx.org. Thanks again. Thanks again, Imani.
Thank you.
All right. I'm afraid of making that big noise that the telephone pot can make in the end. That's it for our show. This is Keeping It Real. Thanks again to our guest. Again, youthpdx.org is where to connect with Imani Muhammad and Youth Organized and United to Help. Special thanks to KBOO Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. Get involved with KBOO Community Radio by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. Gonna make the magic work. Gonna make the magic work. And excellent. Excellent. This is KBOO Portland.
Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.